Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he incorporates all the main topics of the Hindu scriptures in a beautiful logical flow. The most prominent spiritual confusions of our time are addressed and resolved one by one as the series makes its way towards the culminating topic of bhakti and the path of God realization.
Cheto darpana marjanam bhava maha da Chandrika Vitaranam Vidya Vadhu Padam Purnamrita Svadhanam Sarvatmasnapanam Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam Namah Kamalina Purvam Yo Vai Vedanscha Prahinoti Tasmai Tagvangha Devamatma Buddhi Prakasham Mumukshurvai Sharanamaham Prapadye
The divine souls. We'll have a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan and after that we'll continue with this series Today's topic will be Sansar Ka Swaroop.
Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala. Bhajo Giri Dhar Govinda Gopala.
वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की जय। दिस इज द 8th डे ऑफ दिस सीरीज ऑन द एसेंस ऑफ सनातन धर्म। सो फार व्हाट आई हैव टोल्ड यू इज ऑल बेस्ड ऑन वन मंत्र ऑफ द वेदास, तमेव विदित्वाति मृत्युमेति नान्यः पंथा विद्यते यनाय। सो इन दिस वर्स थ्री थिंग्स आर रिफर्ड टू। द वर्स सेज ओनली बाय नोइंग हिम कैन ही क्रॉस ओवर इट और दिस। सो दिस इज माया। ही हु मस्ट बी नोन इज गॉड, भगवान, ब्रह्म। एंड ही हु मस्ट नो गॉड इज द इंडिविजुअल सोल। So only by knowing God can a soul cross over Maya. Nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. This verse goes on to say there is no other way. So from a literary point of view, this is called punarokti. It's a dosh. It's a fault in normal writing that you say the same thing twice. You're being redundant. You already said it once, why are you saying it again? So tam eva means only. Only by knowing him can you cross over this. So Ved already said eva. It means only. Only by knowing him can you cross over this maya. So what was the necessity of saying nanya pantha vidyate yanaya? There's no other way. It means for added emphasis, to make sure we get it, that there you can only cross over Maya by knowing God. There is no other way, no other path, no other means of crossing over Maya except by knowing God. So we went further into Vedas. And we found out that, in fact, this verse and all of the Vedas are being directed at human beings. That human beings are the ones who have to know God. And the reason is that only human beings are given the right to perform karma. So only a human being can progress spiritually. And only a human being can know God. Namanusham binanyat tatvajnanam tu labhyate. Garuda Puran says only when a soul is born as a human being can he know God. Even the celestial gods desire to be born as human for this reason. Although their level of intelligence and knowledge exceeds ours, and the enjoyments they have over there far exceed any enjoyments we have here on earth, yet they all desire to be born as human again because they feel they wasted their last human life in earning a stay in Swarg. Because over there, it's more pleasure than here, but still no happiness. And it's temporary. It ends one day and they come back here and they're even born in lower species before they get another chance to be born as human. So all living beings desire to be born as human so that they can get a chance to know God. And by knowing God, they cross over Maya. I also explained to you that every single soul is astik, which means everybody believes in God. And the logic behind this that I explained to you is that every soul is ansh of God. That we don't get to decide on. That I don't believe in God, so I'm not Ansh of God. Some people in their mind, they think they don't believe in God. Even those people are Ansh of God. It means they're a part of Him. In fact, they're a part of His Jeev Shakti, His soul power. So there's no escaping, no avoiding. Every soul is Ansh of God, who is our Anshi. So what does this mean? Well, because it's the nature of every Ansh to desire his Anshi, to love his Anshi. Thus, every human being loves God automatically, desires God automatically. Without exception, every single soul, because it's not a decision we make in our mind, it's the nature of our soul. Just like a drop of water doesn't decide to run towards the ocean, it happens automatically. A flame doesn't decide to burn up, it happens automatically. So in the same way, our soul is naturally attracted to God. Now this manifests as a desire for happiness, because I explained this to you, that God is happiness. God is Anand. So saying that a soul desires God is the same as saying a soul desires happiness. And this is our everyday experience. We've never met anyone who didn't want to be happy. Every one of us desires to be happy, and in fact, you can say this is our only desire. We have no other desire but the desire for happiness. Every other desire is created by our mind in an attempt to find happiness. Whether it's, oh, I want to make money. Why? For happiness. I want to become powerful. For happiness. I want to become great at something. For happiness. I want to become well known, famous. For happiness. I want to get married. I want to have children. Again, for happiness. So in fact, we all only have one desire, and we don't have a choice in that desire either. Just like we don't decide to love God, our soul naturally loves God. In the very same way, no one had to decide to desire happiness. Since we are Ansh of God and He is happiness, we automatically desire happiness because God and happiness are one and the same. There's not happiness in God. That would mean happiness is something and God is a separate thing. God Himself is happiness and we are Ansh of Him, so we automatically desire happiness without anyone even having taught us. So despite the amazing variation that's found in this universe, where no two faces will be the same, no two fingerprints of any person will be the same, what to say of their minds? Yet, amidst all of this tremendous variety in this universe, one thing is the same for all people, and that is that we all desire happiness. Yet, despite unlimited lifetimes from eternity until now of striving for that happiness every moment, because our mind is always active and it's always active only for that one thing, despite striving every moment for unlimited lifetimes, we have yet to achieve that happiness. It means we've yet to attain God. And I told you that, in case you're wondering, has the happiness that I've enjoyed in this world, is that Anand? So we went into the Vedas, and the Vedas explained to us that true Anand, real happiness, is unlimited, and it lasts forever. So we've never gotten happiness which was of an unlimited amount, nor have we ever gotten any happiness that lasted forever. So it means we've never gotten the kind of happiness which qualifies as real happiness or true Anand. Why not? Again, we went into the scriptures, into the Vedas, and found out that the reason is that even though I told you we're all astic, because we all desire God, the reason we haven't been able to attain God is because we're all gnostic. None of us truly believes in God. At least our mind doesn't. Put it that way, our soul is desiring God, but our mind is confused. So Ved said, asti te vopalabdhavyas tattva bhavena chobhayo. Asti te vopalabdhasya tattva bhava prasidati. If a soul has full faith in God, Rohit, this needs to be turned down. Radhe Radhe. Okay. The moment a soul has full faith in God, God appears before you, Maya is eliminated for you, and you attain perfect happiness that instant. If the moment a soul has full faith in God. So, it means none of us have ever had full faith in God. So, it's a simple thing to understand that if you don't know someone, how can you have faith in them? Once you know the value of something, automatically, put it this way in Hindi, pehle janana, phir manana, phir pyar apne aap ho jata hai. Karna nahi hai, hoga, ho jata hai. Manane se aur manana, janane se. It all happens together. The moment you know the true value of something, you automatically accept it in your heart. You have faith. And the moment that happens, you love that thing. So in other words, because we don't know God, we've never been able to have full faith in God. And Vedas are saying you must know God, and only by knowing God can you cross over this Maya. So, we went into the Vedas to know about God. And the Vedas told us, no one can know God. They also gave us a reason that God is beyond our faculties. What faculties do we have? Our intellect and our senses. So God is beyond our senses, mind, intellect. Why? Because He's divine and our mind and senses are material. As well, He is our prerak, He is our prakashak, He is our dharak. He is the one who gives life to our senses, mind and intellect. He's the one who illuminates our senses, mind and intellect. He's the upholder of our very existence. Thus, how could we, with these senses and intellect which are being upheld, illuminated, given life by God, how could those same senses and intellect turn around and be able to grasp or know God? In addition to this, Vedas told us that God Himself is the only knower of Himself. So if our intellect could know God, it would mean, by definition, our intellect is God, and God is under our intellect. Vedas also told us God is all-knowing. Thus, how could unlimited all-knowing God be grasped by our limited, little-knowing intellect? So, it's useless to try to know God with our own intellect. In addition to this, Vedas told us that God is the abode of simultaneously existing opposites, which doesn't happen in this world. He is both smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest. He is both residing in our heart and residing in His divine abode, and He's omnipresent in this world, all simultaneously. So how can such a thing be understood by our intellect, which is conditioned to understand the things of this world, where something is either yes or no. It's either here or there. It's not everything at once. Like, God is omnipresent in all of His forms. God is both formless and He has a form. How can we understand all of these simultaneously existing opposite situations that exist within God? It's impossible. He's completely beyond our intellect. But we didn't lose hope, because Vedas told us, even though God is not knowable by your intellect, uncountable souls have known God in the past, and uncountable more souls will know God in the future. So how did they know God? Through His grace. The Vedas told us that God is not knowable through your own intellect, but if you receive His grace, then you can know Him. So then we ask the question, if some souls have received God's grace and they have known Him, like Tulsidas, Mira, Tukaram, etc., but we have not received God's grace, it must mean there's a condition. God has a condition that has to be fulfilled in order to receive His grace. Otherwise, we should have received His grace a long time ago, along with Tulsi, Mira, and all the other souls who became saints. So, we did some inquiry and we found out that the condition for receiving God's grace is that we have to surrender to Him. Any soul who becomes surrendered to God instantly receives His grace. But we also learned that this cannot be considered a demand or a price for receiving God's grace, because the act of surrender means doing nothing. So God says, you do nothing, like a newborn baby just has full sharanagati to his mother. The baby does nothing for himself. So that kind of feeling for God is total surrender. He says, you surrender and I'll grace you. Another way to understand surrender is that you have to surrender your mind. That's what has to be surrendered. So you give your mind to God. That cannot be the price of getting His grace. Right? If you're paying for something, you have to give something of equal value to get that thing. Then you're buying it. So God is giving us His divine grace, which means He's going to give us His divine vision. He's going to give us unlimited divine happiness. He's going to give us unlimited divine knowledge. So He's going to give us divine things in unlimited amount forever. And what is He asking in order for us to receive that? He says, give me your material, impure, dirty mind. So that cannot be the price of receiving God's unlimited, invaluable, divine grace. It's not a price. It's just the means of receiving His grace. We surrender ourselves means we open our mind, we open our heart to receive His grace. Then He purifies our heart, our mind. And upon full purity, He gives us all His divine power. We become Maya-teet. We go beyond Maya with His grace. And we receive unlimited divine bliss and unlimited divine knowledge forever. And we get the divine vision of God. He actually gives us divine eyes, divine ears so we can hear Him, divine sense of touch so we can touch Him, so we can relate with Him in the same way that we relate with people in this world. So simply by becoming surrendered, we receive all of that. So in fact, His grace is unconditional. It's just a matter of opening our heart to receive it. That part is on us. Along the way, I also explained Srishti Rahasya, and we understood many things about the creation of this universe, how it comes into being, and how is God involved. Now today we've come to the point where we need to understand about the nature of this world. Why? Because we know we have to surrender our mind to God. But right now our mind is already surrendered to the world. Being surrendered also means being attached. Our mind is fully attached, very deeply attached in this world. So if it were not attached, if it were just free, neither attached to God nor attached in the world, and you heard even one time, God is unlimited bliss. Attach your mind to Him and you'll get it in 1 second. How long would it take us to attach our mind to God? Instantly we could do it. So the reason we cannot surrender to God just by hearing me say it, it's so simple, right? We should all just do it. So why can't we all just do it? Because we're fully attached in the world. Another way to say this is that we have full faith of finding happiness in the world. Why did we get attached in the world? Because we thought we could find happiness here. That's the way a human mind works. Wherever you think or you have hope that I can get happiness from this person or this thing, you form an attachment there. So you have faith in them and you become surrendered to them. We have to have faith that there's happiness in God. But our mind has been believing in the happiness of this world for so long that that faith can't just be broken like that. It takes time. We have to deeply understand the nature of this world. Then this world will release its grip on us. In other words, our worldly attachment will reduce and we'll be able to start turning towards God. Because right now, our back is to God. Even though we take God's name, when we pray, what do most of us ask for? Worldly things. So even when we're praying to God, our back is to Him and we're facing the world. So to move forward spiritually, a person has to reduce worldly attachments and increase his attachment to God. For this reason, we need to understand deeply about the nature of this world and worldly happiness. So first of all, this word detachment. In Hindi, vairagya or virakti. What does it mean? It means no rag. Virag or vairagya means no rag. So what is rag? Rag is attachment. So having no attachment in the world is virag or vairagya. That attachment is of two kinds. There's loving attachment and there's hateful or negative attachment. Both are considered attachment. So we have two words for them, rag and dvesh. Rag is also attachment. Dvesh is also attachment. So having no attachment, vairagya, means having no rag and no dvesh anywhere in this world. The outcome of having rag and dvesh is the very same. It's like two sides of the same coin. Because if you have rag for someone, or if you have dvesh for someone, what are you going to be doing about them? Chintan. You're going to be thinking about them. You're going to be doing remembrance of them. Chintan. So it's like you're doing sadhana. What kind of sadhana do you do in rag? Oh, you keep thinking about that person or that thing that you're attached to. And what do you do in dvesh? Same thing. You keep thinking about them all the time. So the result is the same. If you dislike someone equally as you love someone, the amount you'll think about them will be equal. So in fact, the outcome is the same because you end up getting attached. You even get attached to the one you dislike. It's just a negative attachment. And the outcome of attachment is whatever you're attached to, that's what you attain. We have a couple of divine examples of this. The gopis were so attached to Krishna, he's all they thought about, day and night, 24 hours a day.
Yadohane vahanane mathano pale paprenkhenkhanar bharudito chanamarjanadau gayanti chaina manurak tadhyo shrukanthyo dhanya brajastriya uruk krama chittayana.
Bhagavatam. The ladies of Mathura are praising the gopis, saying that no matter what they were doing, whether they were milking the cows, churning the curd, cooking dinner, taking care of their child, whatever they were doing, all the time Krishna was in their heart. They thought about him 24 hours a day. Chitta dekhu titishama mayi hai. Everywhere they looked, they saw only Krishna. It was like he was in their eyes, not only in their heart. That is the outcome of attachment. That's extreme attachment to God. Positive attachment, rag. We also have the example of Kans. Kans, when he realized that Devaki was pregnant for the final eighth and final time, knowing that her eighth child was going to be Bhagwan himself and he was going to be the one to kill him, he became so fearful of Krishna that everything he was doing, everywhere he went, he saw Krishna. If he was walking somewhere, he'd see Krishna on the path ahead of him. Oh, Krishna's there. He's so afraid Krishna's going to come and kill me. If he was eating something, someone brought a thali full of food for him. In the food on the thali, he saw Krishna and he threw it away. Huh. In his clothes, he saw Krishna and he'd tear his clothes off. He was so afraid of Krishna, he thought about him all the time, 24 hours a day, and he only saw Krishna everywhere. In other words, total attachment of his mind in Krishna through fear. So whether it's through a positive emotion or a negative emotion, you end up getting attached. Kans also went to Golok because of his attachment to Krishna. Whatever you're attached to, that is what you attain. So there's two kinds of attachment, rag and dvesh, and two fields where you can attach your mind, either to God or to Maya. So our object, our goal on the spiritual path is to learn how to detach our mind from this world so that we can attach it to God. Thus, let's understand a little more deeply about the nature of this world. Sansar. That's the technical name for the world. Sansar. And the word sansar is defined in Sanskrit, in the Vedas, as meaning this. Sansaratiti sansarah. In other words, sadakne wala. The one that keeps moving on, keeps moving ahead, changing. Jagat also has a similar meaning. Gacchatiti jagat. Chalne wala. The one that keeps moving, keeps going ahead. So this world is never static. It's always moving ahead. So the question is it moving in an upward direction for the better, or is it moving in a downward direction for the worse? There are two camps, two philosophies in regard to this. Bhautikvadis, those who believe in material progress. They say the world is going up. It's moving in an upward direction. And Adhyatmavadis, those who believe in spiritual progress, they say looking at the world, it looks like the world is moving in a downward direction. So which one is right? In fact, both are right. Because both, if you look from a technological point of view, this world has progressed a lot just in the last few decades. we're so much farther ahead in terms of technology, conveniences, luxuries, comforts. This world is advancing faster and faster and faster in terms of this kind of material progress. But from the point of view of spiritual progress, or the spiritual nature of people, things seem to be moving in a downward direction. If you look at society in general, crime rates, the harmony within families, which is also reflected in the society, it looks from that point of view like things are starting to go down. So from a purely material point of view, things are going up, and from a spiritual point of view, things are going down. So which philosophy should we adopt? Should we become a Bhautikvadi, or should we become an Adhyatmavadi? In fact, we need a combination of both. Kripaluji Maharaj, Jagadguru Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, he says, if you're an Adhyatmavadi who says, we don't need anything from this world, this whole world is useless, you're wrong. And if you're a Bhautikvadi who says we only need material progress, we don't need any spiritual progress, you're wrong. Actually, both Bhautikvad and Adhyatmavad are meant to complement each other, and neither one can be independently successful. They need each other. If an Adhyatmavadi says, oh, I don't need anything from this world. Well, you need food and water and shelter, don't you? You've made finding God the aim of your life. Good. That's what you're meant to do. But you still need something from this world. So if that person says, no, there have been great yogis who lived on nothing but eating dry patte, dry leaves. They didn't need anything from this world. Well, are those leaves not a part of this samsara? Oh yes, they are. Okay, well, there were great yogis and munis who didn't even eat leaves. They just lived on vayu. They just breathed and they stayed alive like that. Okay, the air they're breathing, is that not a part of this samsara? Okay, there were great yogis who didn't even need air. They would go into samadhi and not even take a breath for thousands of years. They just sat still for thousands of years. Okay, where were they sitting? Upon this earth? This earth is also a part of samsara, is it not? Okay, there were such great yogis who didn't even sit on the earth. They levitated. They didn't eat anything. They didn't breathe. They didn't even sit on the earth. They stayed in samadhi and levitated in space. Well, that akash, that space, is also one of the five material elements of this samsara. Those great yogis had a physical body, didn't they? That's also made of samsara. So as long as you have a body, how can you say you don't need this samsara? The fact is, everybody needs something from this world. As long as you have a body, you need something from this world. That's why Krishna said in the Gita, Natyashnatastu yogosti nachaikantamanashnatah nachati svapna shilasya jagrato naivacharjuna yuktahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta svapna vabodhasya yogo bhavati dukkha. He said, Arjun, you cannot be successful on this spiritual path if you are living in an undabund way in the material world. He said, this path is not for someone who eats too much or who eats too little. This path is not for someone who sleeps too much or who sleeps too little. He says, yuktahara. You have to have control over your eating. So eat just the right amount. Have control over your sleeping. Sleep just the right amount. Have control over your cheshta, over your behavior. Be modest in your behavior. Then you will be successful on this spiritual path. So taking care of our body is necessary for progress on this path. If you don't live a healthy life and your body gets sick, that disturbs your mind. Then with what mind will you get attached to God? Your mind is worrying about, oh, this pain and this sickness and that disease. So when the mind is occupied with that, how will it get attached to God? Thus, you need to take proper care of your body. Proper food, proper sleep, proper medicine, proper exercise. Then our mind will be healthy and we'll be able to use that mind to attach it to God.
Sharira madhyam khalu dharma sadhanam.
This body is the means of doing sadhana. It's the means of reaching God.
Tan binu bhajan veda nahi barana.
Tulsidas ji says, without this body, how could you attain God? So this body is our sadhana dham, moksha karadwara, Ramayana. Through having received this human body, if you take care of it, and then you dedicate your energy towards finding God, you can succeed. So even an adhyatmavadi has to accept the importance of this material world. But this world is not meant to be indulged in. It's not just here for our enjoyment, it's here for our use.
Yes, sansar hamare upayog ke liye hai, hamare upabhog ke liye nahi.
In fact, Bhagavatam says,
yavad bhriyet jatharam tavat svatvam hi dehinam adhikam yobhimanyet sasteno dandamarhati.
You should only keep as much money as you need to fill your belly, meet your basic physical needs.
Do roti, do kapde, a roof over your head.
That's all anybody needs. Bhagavatam says that's all the money you should keep for yourself. The rest you use it to do good deeds with. Use it in charity, use it to help others. If you don't, if you keep that for your own enjoyment,
sasteno dandamarhati.
Veda Vyas is being stern with us. He says, you will be considered a thief and you will be punished accordingly in your next life. If you hoard more money than you need, why? So that you can enjoy this world for your own selfish, fulfilling your own selfish desires. So this world is here for our use. We can get calories, vitamins, minerals, protein, all the things we need from this world to support our physical body. So this world is here to support our physical body. It's not here for us to indulge in. So if someone says, well, let's forget about adhyatmavad. We don't need this world. We only need material. We don't need spiritual progress, pardon me. We only need material progress. We only need this world. We don't need God. If someone thinks that, then he is also mistaken. Even from his own point of view. See, let's forget about attaining God right now. Just from the point of view of enjoying this world. See, with material progress, what can we do? We can learn to some extent to control things in this world. To create great things that we can use in different ways. But if we don't have control over what's in here, then we're going to misuse all of our great inventions and technology. Take just take an example of the things that we create for the defense of ourselves, our family, our country, weapons, bombs, things like that. There's nothing inherently wrong in creating such things. But what determines whether they're used for good or for bad? Technology has no control over how we use it. We can have all the material progress until we progress in here, which means spiritual progress, adhyatmavad. Until we progress spiritually and we clean up this inner machinery so that we have positive thoughts, then we're going to do good things, then we're going to use those inventions and that technology for something good. Until that happens, there's quite a good possibility that we'll use all of those inventions and technology for something bad and we'll end up spoiling the world. So even if your only goal is to enjoy the world, even then, Bhautikvad cannot stand on its own, because all the material progress cannot help us improve ourselves internally. Bhautikvad has no answer for that. Even a staunch Bhautikvadi who doesn't care anything about God, he does love godly qualities. Ishwariya sampatti, you can say. Godly qualities meaning like honesty, compassion, forgiveness, these are godly qualities. And we want to see these develop in the world. Even someone who has no concern with God, he wants to see these good qualities develop in the world. How will they develop? Every government in the world, all politicians talk like, okay, people need to become good, they need to do good. How is that going to happen? Through spiritual progress, not through material progress. You become good through making spiritual progress. So even someone who wants to enjoy this world, meaning he wants everybody to be honest, generous, compassionate, forgiving, then he's going to need to take the help of adhyatmavad. So, we see that both are necessary. We need both spiritual progress and we need material. We need this material world. So we make use of this material world properly, that will help us on our spiritual progress. And by progressing spiritually, we make the world a better place automatically. So the two complement each other. But do keep in mind that the ultimate goal is attaining God. So living in this world is supposed to help us attain God. This world is not the be-all and the end-all. The ultimate goal is attaining God, so we need to live in this world with that in mind, that my goal is to attain God. Then we'll live in the world the way we were meant to. We will live a balanced, healthy life. We'll be good people. And we'll make use of the world, but we won't overindulge and end up spoiling our health and our spiritual progress. Let's go deeper into the nature of this samsara. Keep in mind, why is this important to understand? It's important to understand the nature of this world so that you can detach your mind from it and you can attach it to God. Now, some people say this samsara is mithya. And other people say, no, it's satya. In other words, the world is real. And some people say, no, the world is fake. It's not really here. It's actually nothing. Or it's your own imagination. It's a creation of your own mind. So, there have been, in history, before now, four Jagatgurus. Jagatguru means someone who is unanimously accepted by all the scholars of India as the top most knowledgeable person that they all agree to or submit to, that he has the correct interpretation of the scriptures. So the first Jagatguru was Shankaracharya. And he said,
यह संसार मिथ्या है, ये कुछ नहीं है. He said the world is fake. But the other three Jagadgurus who came after him, Jagadguru Nimbarkacharya, Jagadguru Ramanujacharya, and Jagadguru Madhvacharya, they all said, no, no, no. Yeah, sansar satya hai. This world really does exist. It's not just your imagination. And the fifth original Jagadguru, who is currently alive on this earth planet, my Guruji, Jagadguru Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, he says the world is both mithya and satya. It's both real and fake at the same time. How is this possible? Because this world is made of Maya. Maya, one of the three eternal existences, is the substance of this world. And there are two kinds of Maya. There's one called Vidya Maya and one called Avidya Maya. So Vidya Maya creates or produces the outer world, and Avidya Maya produces this inner world. So there's two worlds, two types of samsara. There's the outer world, outer samsara, and there's the inner world, inner samsara. So two kinds of Maya. Vidya Maya produces the outer world, which is real. And Avidya Maya produces our inner samsara, which is not real. It's a creation of our own mind. So the outer world is not a creation of our own mind. Satyam Bhutamayam Jagat, Mahabharat says, this matter you see is real. It really exists. It's an actual energy. Satyad bhutani jatani sthavarani charani cha, Mahabharat. This world is produced by God, and God is real, so this world is also real, and everything in it is real. Mayam tu prakritim vidyan mayinan tu maheshwaram. Ved says, the world is made by God using his Maya Shakti. He activates that Maya, that power, and Maya produces the world. So Maya is his power. Charam pradhanam amritaksharam hara charatmana vishate deva ekah tasya bhidhyanad yojanat tatva bhavat Bhuyashchante Vishva Maya Nivritti. In other words, both the souls and Maya are powers of God. Daivi Hyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya Gita. Krishna explains, this Maya is my power. Shaktitvan Nanritam Vedyam. Shandilya Maharshi says, because this Maya is a power of God, how can it be fake? It's not fake, it's real. So since Maya is real, the outer world is also real. God uses Maya to produce this world. Maya dhyakchena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya Jagat viparivartate Gita. Krishna says, I use Maya, I activate it, and it takes the form of this universe. Maya can't create the universe on its own, as we discussed yesterday. So with God's help, Maya does it. Just like if you have a pair of tongs, you use those tongs, you can pick up even a hot coal out of the fire. But is it the tong who's picking up the hot coal out of the fire? No, if your hand lets go of the tong can't do anything. It just lies there uselessly.
because there's power in your hand. There's life in your hand because your soul is here. You can pick up the tongs, you can use those, and you can pick up a hot coal or an ice cube and not burn yourself or freeze yourself. But the tongs get their power from your hand. In the same way, Maya does not function on its own. Maya functions with the power it receives from God. God activates Maya and Maya produces the universe. God deactivates Maya, in other words, he removes his power, and the universe dissolves back into God. Maya dissolves back into its seed form. So this outer world is real. If someone, some Advaiti, someone who follows the philosophy that this world doesn't even exist, it's nothing. If he comes and tells you this world is nothing, I now have the knowledge that this world doesn't exist, then why don't you ask him, okay then, have you stopped eating food? Have you stopped drinking water? Have you stopped breathing air? No, I still eat and drink and breathe. Why? It's all fake. It's all nothing. Food is fake. Water is fake. Air is fake. Why do you need them when you have the knowledge that this is all fake? Why are you still breathing, drinking, and eating? Because it's not fake. It's real. And even a jnani paramahans, a liberated Brahmagyani absorbed in the bliss of formless God but still on this earth planet because he still has a physical body, he still has to eat and drink and breathe. Even Shankaracharya, when he was writing this philosophy of Advaitvad, and saying that this whole world is nothing, it's just fake, it doesn't even exist, he used a pen and a paper to write that, didn't he? So was that pen fake? Was that paper fake? So this philosophy that the outer world is fake is wrong. The outer world is real. It exists. If it were just the product of our imagination, none of us could agree on anything. If I held up a water bottle, someone would say, he's got an elephant in his hand. And someone else would say, he's got an apple in his hand. Someone else would say, he's got a sword in his hand. Look out. Because it's not our imagination. If it was our imagination, 100 people would look at the same object and see 100 different things. Because this water bottle is real, we all see it. We're not imagining it. It's here. That's why we see it. So this outer world is real. It's the inner world which is the creation of our own mind. So although the inner world feels very real to us, it's not real in a substantial way like the outer world is. See, this water bottle's still here. It didn't disappear. So the outer world is relatively stable. Things that are, they continue to exist. But our inner world is very unstable. You can be thinking something or feeling one thing one minute, and it can totally change the next minute. So our feelings are very fickle and changeable. It all depends on our thinking. And it doesn't necessarily depend on the outer world. You see, the same object can give one person happiness and one person pain. It's the same thing. The thing is real. The inner reaction is different. Let's say there are two friends who are both jewelers, and they're walking down the road together, and they both see something gleaming, glittering ahead. And they both, because they're jewelers, and they've seen diamonds millions of times, they both recognize that's a diamond. And they both run to pick it up first. But one of them was faster and he got there first and he sees it's a blue diamond. This might be worth $1 million. He's jumping for joy. the other jeweler who was too slow, he sees it's a blue diamond. I just lost out on $1 million. He's almost crying. He's so distraught. A third passerby comes and he says, what's going on? One of you is jumping for joy. The other one's almost in tears. What happened? So they showed him the diamond and explained their story. And that third man didn't feel anything. For one thing, he wasn't a jeweler, so he didn't know the value of the diamond. And for the other thing, it didn't concern him, so he felt neither sorrow nor joy. See, one object giving one person happiness, giving another person sorrow, and giving a third person neither joy nor sorrow. So the thing, the diamond, is real. It's a stable thing existing in this world. Our reaction is our own creation, based on our thinking. So that's why we say the world is fake. Not the outer world, the inner world. The inner world is called fake because it's so changeable and it depends on our thinking. Let's say it's your birthday and a delivery comes to the door. You open the door. Oh, someone sent you a dozen red roses. You feel so happy seeing those roses. I wonder who remembered me on my birthday. You're elated. You open the card and there's a message from your enemy with a mocking note on the inside. He sent those flowers sarcastically to mock you on your birthday. You take those flowers, you open the waste bin and you slam them in there. You never want to see them again. The flowers are the same. Based on your thinking, your reaction changed. The same flowers were giving you so much happiness. Then the same flowers giving you so much unhappiness, you didn't want to see them and you threw them in the garbage. So the flowers are real. Your reaction is changeable. So that's why we say what's going on in here, that's the illusion. What's going on out there is real. So the objects and people of this world are real. Our inner world is our own creation. So let's go a little deeper into what is this inner world like. This inner world is also made of sattva raj tam because it's a product of, it's a creation of maya. Maya has three qualities, sattva raj tam, and your mind is made of maya. So your inner world is made of maya. So your inner world, your mind, has sattva raj tam, three qualities. These three qualities of maya are constantly, you can say, having a competition to see which one is on top, which one predominates in your mind. Like three wrestlers in a ring fighting against each other. At one time, one wrestler holds down the other two and he's on top. Then the other wrestler gets free and he holds down the other two and he's on top. And then the third wrestler gets out and he jumps on top. Something like this, in our mind, this is always going on. Sometimes sattva predominates and it suppresses raj and tam. At that time, you're more spiritually minded, energetic, but in a peaceful, generous, spiritual way. When raj predominates, you're active, but in a selfish, ambitious, stressful way. And when tam predominates, then apathy, laziness prevails, and other bad thoughts. So these three gunas of our mind are constantly interchanging. Sometimes when sattva predominates, we're in a certain mood. Then raj predominates, we're in a different mood. Tam predominates, we're in another mood. So this pravritti, which is determined by which guna predominates, that keeps changing in a person's mind all the time. There's not like a set time, like at 4 a.m., Sattvagun predominates, and then from 10 a.m. Rajagun predominates, and then from 4 p.m. till you go to bed, Tamogun predominates. It's not like that. There's no way to predict it. It can just happen and change anytime. And this can help us understand our relationships as well, because imagine, in my mind this is going on all the time. In someone else's mind, this is going on all the time. In every member of our family, this is going on, and they're not coordinated. You see, when the two gunas in someone's mind match up, then they'll get along. There will be dosti between them. When sattva and sattva both predominate in two people's minds, oh, then they'll agree. They'll get along. When they don't predominate, one is has sattva predominating, one has raj predominating, then they won't agree. Let's say a husband and wife were talking about what to do tonight. It's Saturday night in New York. What to do? The wife had sattva gun predominating in her mind. So she said, oh, there's a lecture, a spiritual lecture happening at Hanuman Mandir. Let's go and listen to that. And the husband said, no, it's Saturday night and there's the new Harry Potter movie is out. I want to go and see a movie, because Rajogun was predominating in his mind. So they couldn't agree. The wife was saying, I want to go to the lecture. The husband was saying, I want to go to the movie. So they decided, okay, you go to your lecture and I'll go to my movie. Let's say both were predominating with sattva-gun. Even within that, there can be a different intensity. Like, let's say the wife's mind was, had 10 units of sattva-gun, and the husband's mind only had 4 units of sattva-gun. But they both decided, okay, let's go to the lecture. And they're sitting there, and the time was going by. He's been talking for more than an hour now. Because the wife's mind was more intensely sattvic at that time, she's still listening. Yes, understanding. Yes, this is important. In the husband's mind, only 4 units of sattva-gun. So after an hour, he's thinking, really? How long is this guy going to keep talking? If I leave now, I can catch the late show. And he gets up and goes. So even within a matching guna, there can be a disagreement. So now think about us trying to get along with each other, even within our family, when all those different gunas are predominating, and even if you're both in sattva gun, how long is it going to stay that way? It keeps changing. His might change, yours changes later. So how can we expect to always get along? It's not possible. The only reason we're able to get along is that because we always want different things. So sometimes you compromise, sometimes your spouse compromises, sometimes your children compromise, sometimes the parents compromise. You say, no, I don't want that thing. But since you want it, or since they want it, okay. Only because of this are we able to get along. If people just, let out their own personal desires all the time, this world would be total chaos. So this helps us understand our relationships. If you know this, if you understand this, then you're not surprised if someone doesn't support you or favor you or agree with you. It should be the other way around. You should be surprised if someone agrees with you. Considering what I just told you about the changing gunas in a person's mind, how can you expect even a single person in this world to always agree with you all the time? It's not possible. Yet, we have this fantastic hope that everyone is going to agree with me and support me and favor me all the time. Everyone in this whole world is going to like me all the time. That's why we're constantly disappointed. If we just understand this one fact about human behavior, the human mind, and about our own selfish desires, then if someone doesn't agree with you, someone opposes you, you'll say, yeah, that's normal, of course. According to the nature of this world and the nature of the human mind, that is what I would expect. Someone does support you, someone does favor you, oh, what a surprise. I didn't expect that. In fact, I might advise you to be a little cautious of the person who's supporting you. Why is he supporting me? There's some kind of swarth chupa hua hai iske piche. Why is he praising me so nicely? Why is he acting so humbly in front of me? So politely? Oh, it's because he wants something. Yes. In fact, we all do that to each other, don't we? When we want something, when the child wants something, oh, mommy, comes like that. We know how to be humble and polite when we want something and praise someone when we want something. So we're always doing this to other people, aren't we? Yes, we are. We're all expert at it. Then why do we believe it when someone does it to us? We think we're fooling everybody else, but no one's going to try to fool us. In truth, we want what we want, and if we need to be nice to someone to get it, we'll do that. Nothing wrong with that, but we shouldn't think that, oh, this person, you know, this is real. It's okay. Everybody has their own selfish reasons for doing things, so we shouldn't be surprised if people oppose us or don't agree with us. We should be surprised if someone does agree with us and does support us. And if we live our life in this way, it means we're seeing the reality of this world. We don't have unhealthy hopes from the world or from the people of this world that this person is going to love me all the time in every situation. That's impossible. In fact, Ved says, Nava are patyu kamaya pati priyo bhavatyatmanastu kamaya pati priyo bhavati. Nava are sarvasya kamaya sarvam priyam bhavatyatmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. This is really going to surprise you. Ved says, no one does anything for anyone else's happiness. Everything we do is for our own happiness. This might be shocking to you if you've never considered this or understood the philosophy behind it. It sounds a little harsh and cynical, doesn't it? Let's understand why is Ved saying this. Ved is saying, actually word for word, is saying the wife never does anything for her husband's happiness. Everything she does is for her happiness. The husband never does anything for the wife's happiness. Everything he does is for his happiness. The children never do anything for their parents' happiness. Everything they do is for their happiness. And so on and so on and so on. You can extend that to every relationship in this world. In other words, everything we do is for our happiness, not for anyone else's happiness. Now you may say, well, this contradicts my own experience. I mean, just last week my wife was sick and I stayed awake all night looking after her. And I'm a parent. When our child was newborn, our child wasn't giving us anything, meaning our child didn't even recognize us that you're my mother or you're my father. So what did that child know about loving? The child didn't love us in return. So we loved that child unconditionally for that child's happiness. You could say this based on your own experience. But what's behind that behavior? The parents want that child to grow up and be able to recognize them and love them in return and also serve them when they get older. That hope is behind that. And let's go to the original reason we had children. Ask yourself this honestly. Why did you have children? When you made that decision, were you thinking, I want to have children for the happiness of that soul who's going to be born as my child? No, Not a single parent ever thinks this. We think, I'm going to have children because having children will make me happy. Very simple, isn't it? When that was the original reason for having children, then how can we ever pretend that we're doing anything for their happiness? I'm being very blunt with you tonight. You've been listening to me for a whole week, so I can get away with it a little bit. Why did the husband marry the wife? If in your case it happened in an arranged marriage, when the husband came around, the prospective husband came around to interview the prospective wife, was he looking at, I wonder if I'll be able to make her happy? No. He was looking at, is she going to be able to make me happy? Is she the kind of wife I want? And she was also thinking, is he going to be able to make me happy? Do I want to choose him as my husband? She wasn't thinking, oh, will I be able to make him happy? So you see, the Aadhaar, the very basis of our relationships, is Swarth. And this is not an indictment of our character. This is not a bad thing. Remember what I told you right from the beginning. Our nature is to desire happiness because we're Ansh of Bhagwan who is Anand. So it is Akatya Niyam. It cannot be changed. Everyone must desire happiness until they attain God. Then they've got that happiness. Once you've got that happiness, then you can do something for someone else's happiness. Until then, every moment, every thought we have, the reason behind it is one thing and one thing only. How to find Anand. For who? For me. So even if we're helping someone else, it looks like we're doing it for their happiness. So it's not a bad thing, but actually helping them makes us happy. That's the real reason we do it. So our own happiness is the reason behind everything that we do.
Jehite kachunij swarath hoi ta parmamta karai sab soi sur nar muni sab ki yahriti स्वार्थ लागी करहि सब प्रीति.
It's a law of this world. For everyone who has not attained God. If you have not attained God, then you're always looking for happiness. So, whoever makes you happy, that is who you're going to love. That is who you're going to get attached to. Very simple. If someone makes you more happy, you're going to get more attached to them, you're going to love them more. If a person you used to love a lot starts making you less happy, you'll love them less. If a person you used to love a lot stops making you happy altogether, you'll stop loving them altogether. If that same person starts making you unhappy, you'll start disliking them. It's very natural, because the Aadhaar is Swarth. One time a wife just wrote a little note and left it where her husband would find it. She just made up some name, like she's pretending that she's writing this letter to some other man. Oh, so-and-so, I can't wait to meet with you. On such and such a day, I'm going to sneak away when my husband doesn't know and we'll meet at this place. And she signs it and she leaves it out where her husband can see it. So her husband gets home from work and he sits down and he finds that note and he reads it. He says, what? What's this? Is what she's doing behind my back? And she brings him chai. Oh, how was your day? How was my day? I understand everything now. What? What do you understand? Yeah. See, he shows her the note. His mother-in-law, his mother, comes out and grabs the note and says, you fool, don't you know it's April 1st? Oh, yes, I was just saying to myself, how could my wife be doing something like this? It's not possible. You see, in 1 second it changed.
from saath hi jiyenge, saath hi marenge, to I never want to see your face again, get out, in 1 second, and then, oh yes, how, no, I knew it couldn't be true. So from love to hate and back to love in a matter of moments. That is the state of our inner world. It's so fickle. It's not based on reality. It's based on our perception of what we think is real, of what we think another person is thinking about us. Even if someone looks at us, they might be daydreaming about something else. Maybe they're thinking about something that someone said to them today. And they're making a face like this, but they happen to be looking in your direction accidentally. You think, why is that person looking at me like that? They don't like me. Then I don't like them. All of this is your imagination. So this is our inner world. It's not based on reality. It's just based on our own whims and our own desires and our own thoughts. Therefore, this inner world is fake, but the outer world is real. But through spiritual progress, we can learn to control this inner world. Because if you control the inner world, the outer world can no longer harm you in any way. If you have mastered your inner world, it doesn't matter what happens in this outer world, good or bad. You could be made king of the whole world like Prahlad, Dhruv, Ambarish. You could be made to rule like Bharat. But you won't be affected by the power and wealth that's been given you because you have control over your inner world. And the worst things in the world, the worst things imaginable could happen to you, but they won't make you sad because you have control over your inner world. So the object of detachment is not to destroy the outer world. In other words, oh, if just this world was gone, everything would be fine. Let me run away to the jungle or an ashram somewhere. In other words, now the outer world is gone for me. Your inner world is the problem, not the outer world. You'll be sitting there in the ashram thinking about, oh, I used to have a big house in Long Island, and I used to go and see nice movies on Saturday night. So the inner world is still giving you problems. It's still attached to the outer world, even if you've removed yourself from the outer world. Thus, what I'm teaching you is not to leave the outer world. What I'm teaching you is to get control over the inner world. And to do that fully, we have to understand more deeply about this world, this outer world, and what we consider to be happiness. Because Vishnu Puran says, Tasmat dukhatmakam nasti naiva kinchit sukhatmakam. There is not even a drop of happiness in this world, nor is there any sorrow. This world has no happiness and no sorrow, which completely contradicts our own everyday experience. We all experience both happiness and sorrow every day. So we must understand the secret behind this. We have to understand the science behind this. Then we will understand the truth about this world and we'll be able to get control over our inner world and attach our mind to God. So we'll continue from there tomorrow. And today we'll finish by doing another kirtan. So like we did earlier in the week in this kirtan, there's a place where you'll have to repeat Govinda and do that when I come down from the high part. Radhe Govinda, Govinda, Radhe Radhe. Radhe Govinda, Govinda, Radhe Radhe. Govinda, Govinda, Radhe, Radhe. Radhe, Govinda, Govinda, Radhe, Radhe. रहे कृपा करु कृपा मई राधे तो ही भूलू नहीं पल छिन राधे कृपा करु कृपा मई राधे तो ही भूलू नहीं पल छिन आधे तो ही भूलू नहीं पल छिन आधे तू तो ब्रज रस अम्ब भी राधे एक बूंद तिला दे मोही राधे तो ब्रज रस अम्ब धीराधे एक बूंद पिला दे मोही राधे एक बूंद पिला दे मोही राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 तो कृपा की है मूर्ति राधे कहाँ घटी जाए कृपा करु राधे कृपा की है मूर्ति राधे कहाँ घटी जाए कृपा करु राधे कहाँ घटी जाए कृपा करु राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे तो मादन रस वारी राधे जे रस वश बन वारी राधे तो मादन रस वारी राधे जे ही रस वश बन वारी राधे पराशक्ति रूप राधे तो ही तजी पूर्ण ब्रह्म श्याम आधे पराशक्ति रूप राधे तो अस पराशक्ति रूप राधे तो ही तजी पूर्ण ब्रह्म श्याम आधे गोविंद राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे सब तेरा मैं भी तेरा राधे उन्हीं तू ही बता राधे तो ही काधे मेरा सब तेरा मैं भी तेरा राधे तूनी तू ही बता राधे तो ही काधे तूनी तू ही बता राधे तो ही काधे गोविंद राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 तू तो मेरी थी है रहेगी भी राधे तेरे सिवा मेरा कोई नहीं राधे तू तो मेरी थी है रहेगी भी राधे तेरे सिवा मेरा कोई नहीं राधे ओ तेरे सिवा मेरा कोई नहीं राधे तेरा पाछा नहीं छोड़ूं अब राधे अपनाए आना अपनाए राधे तेरा पाछा नहीं छोड़ूं अब राधे अपनाए आना अपनाए राधे अपनाए आना अपनाए राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे
सब जन खरे खरे राधे खरे संग खोटे को चला दे तेरे सब जन खरे खरे राधे खरे संग खोटे को चला दे खरे संग खोटे को चला दे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे
बोलिए राघवेंद्र सरकार की जय।